Episode 17 of Outlander Cast is brought to you by the Tag You're It Etsy shop. Whether it's an Outlander-inspired piece of jewelry for your favorite Sassenach or just an original jewelry creation designed by Don the owner, you can find something there for anyone. So please, take the time to visit Don at www.tagyourit.biz. That's B-I-Z. Tag your mama, tag your pet, tag your it, whatever it is.
She asked forgiveness and I gave it. But the truth is, I'd forgiven everything she'd done and everything she could do long before that day. For me, that was no choice. That was falling in love.
Welcome to Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake. It's a podcast dedicated to the show Outlander on Stars. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Outlander Cast. I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name's Blake, and the world is finally right again.
Do tell.
Well, I got my wife. She's back to normal. She's back in the living world.
Almost.
That was a long way away, man. I mean, whew.
Guys, I could really use some Claire help. I don't know if you can hear it in my voice. I'm going to cough like every 7 seconds, but yeah, I was like a zombie.
She's pulling through it.
Yeah.
Not only that, I got the Red Sox back. It's opening day for baseball. The weather is out. The birds are chirping. It's a beautiful day out, right?
Well, what's best is that Outlander is back.
Outlander is back. And we're back. We're back having a job. I mean, we did this like once a month, you know, for the past few months. But we're back. We're back, baby.
That's right.
I love it.
And you know what else is back?
What's
a whole
that?
Bunch of new stuff. New stuff, not just new episodes, but there's a whole bunch of new additions to the show.
That's right. We're going to have some new music intros for you. We're going to have some really cool new adaptations that we've done from Baron McCreary's music to help introduce this new stuff that we got. But we also got a new rating system.
A rating system?
We got a rating system for the episodes. So, you know how, like, some people give, like, 4 stars, 5 stars for, you know, like, a good show or a good movie?
Yeah.
We're not giving stars. You want to know what we're giving?
What are we giving?
We're giving kilts.
Oh, I love it.
All right, so we're going to base this on a 1 to 5 scale. 1 being really terrible and 5 being amazing, like, really, really good. So, 1 kind of being, like, Rent. And then 5 being...
Oh, my God. Rent was not a 1.
Oh, Rent was a 1. It was maybe a 1.5.
Okay, in your opinion.
Okay, in my opinion, okay, I'm just giving you context. And then 5 being the Garrison Commander. That being the best episode so far, in my opinion, of Outlander.
And we each get to rate, because I don't agree with you all the time, right?
Oh, yeah, no.
I don't think I ever really agree with you.
We're both given ratings. As a matter of fact, I encourage everybody to give ratings. Call in, get on the social media, tell us what you think. How many kilts does this show deserve? And I think that's what we're gonna do going forward.
Okay.
So 5 kilts being amazing, 1 kilt really sucking.
Okay.
Fair enough?
Yeah.
All right, I like that idea.
So do we rate the show right now?
Yeah, why not? Let's rate the show. What do you got for your rating?
My rating would be 4 kilts for this episode.
Four kilts.
4. Yeah, that's
wow.
Pretty high. I know.
That's a high kilt rating.
It is. It is. You know what really did it for me?
What?
Was the cinematography.
Mm-hmm. Neville Kidd. Oh, my God. Good stuff.
Yes. Just those gorgeous shots, generally of water. Like, if there was water involved, I was like, oh, my God, this is beautiful. Oh, there's more water. There's another river. Gorgeous. And Bear McCreary's music.
Yes, exactly. Bear McCreary, you know... A lot of people say that he is finally starting to get into that level of Michael Giacchino or, you know, that whole
Oh, he's
level.
Already there. No, he is there.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, he got there pretty well with BSG. Walking Dead, it's the music is important to the show, but it doesn't make it. However,
it makes this show.
it totally makes this show. It's as much a part of the show as Scotland or the characters themselves.
And I think, you know, often we talk about the costumes. I don't think the costumes necessarily shone and shined in this episode. Mm-hmm. I think the acting really, really played a huge part. But for me, it was the beauty. I think just the excitement of coming back to see the show, that was very exciting. What took away a star was the spanking scene, which we will talk about later. If that had been handled differently, in my opinion, this may have been a much higher ultimate rating. How about you? How many kilts would you rate this show?
I'm giving it 3.5.
Okay, we're pretty close.
I'm giving it 3.5. I'm bordering 3 kilts.
Okay, tell me why it lost points.
It lost points for the spanking scene. We'll get into that later, obviously.
Oh my God, do we agree on something?
We did agree on something, finally.
Wow.
Just like a married couple, who would have thunk? But also, the direction of this episode, the pacing of this episode was off. It didn't feel right to me. And especially during the rescue scene, you couldn't tell where you were. You couldn't tell the context of what was happening.
It was dark. They were running. They didn't know where they were either.
And it was just, okay, they're on the floor. And then all of a sudden, they're in the tower. And then things blow up. And blah! Like, no, there was no, it just felt jumbled to me. And I didn't like that.
Okay.
So because of those things, I'm giving it a 3.5 kill
rating.
But
why did you like it?
Well, let's save that. Let's save it for the show.
Okay.
But before we get into the show, I wanted to say that we finally got our 1,000th follower on Facebook.
Yay! Who is it?
And it is a fine young woman known as Alessia Abdoni. And if I'm saying your name wrong, I am so sorry.
It might be Alicia.
It could be Alicia. Yeah, why not? I'll go with that. Alicia Abdoni. Why not? So she is the 1,000th follower on Facebook. And as we promised, we are going to give her a free Outlander soundtrack. So Alicia, whatever your name is.
We
love you. Get in touch with us. Give us an email or Facebook us, like, because you're the 1,000th follower on Facebook. And we'll send that out to you.
Thank you all so much for those of you who do follow us on Facebook. And this is just a friendly reminder that all of our social media handles are literally just Outlander Cast. So that's Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find us there. We are going to jump into the episode recap, but this episode recap is brought to you by the Red-Haired Lass Etsy shop, recently featured on Nerdist.com. How cool is that?
Wicked.
The Red-Haired Lass creates Outlander-inspired paper crafts and other assorted goods, such as the personal Cregna Dune tree and tabletop globes. I think we need to get those for the studio.
We definitely need to get that for the studio.
Sounds awesome.
Luckily, we have her as a sponsor.
Yes, the Red-Haired Lass, handmade products from our home to yours. All right, so we start off with some beautiful shots of none other than water. Water, as I said, was so gorgeous in this episode. I'm just really excited to see if we get to see some more water. But Jamie is skipping stones and talking about his relationship problems.
And you know, it was great, too, because the water, I think, for the whole episode, it kept reoccurring throughout the whole episode. And I couldn't tell why. What was the point of the water? Why do they keep showing it? Obviously, it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. But it seems like there's something. It seems like there's more meaning to the water than just, oh, hey, look, it's water. It's rushing waterfalls. And the way I see it, the waterfall is maybe Jamie's life kind of cascading away from him, not knowing where he's going. It's just going, falling down. And it's like, you know how water always finds the path of least resistance?
Yeah.
I think Jamie's just finding out, like, okay, what do I do? How do I go forward? And how can I actually make my life, how can I make these choices without having to bear the responsibility, almost? I'm going to go with the path of least resistance.
Oh, okay.
What do you think?
I think you're very deep.
Of course I'm deep. It's me.
At the end of Jamie's huge, you know, monologue, he says, this is the day he became a man.
Right.
When is this day? So this is what I'm a little confused at. Is so as he's skipping the stones, you actually see Leary come up. Is he saying that he became a man on the day that Leary came up to him and he made this talk and decisions with Claire later on that happened in their bedroom?
Sure. Or is it when he and Claire figured out what they have to do going forward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, is he a man of his customs, or is he a new man trying to figure out the rest of his life with his now wife, right?
Yeah.
So, but the other thing I really like about this, too, is now we're finally getting Jamie's point of view. It's no longer just Claire's show anymore. And it should be that way, right? Now they're married. Their life is one.
Well, that begs a big question. Is Jamie going to be the narrator for the rest of season one?
I really hope so.
Or was it just this episode? Because part of me thinks that it might have been just this episode specifically to help bring about Jamie's perspective in the spanking scene.
That's possible.
Because had it been done from Claire's perspective, you would have heard a hell lot of, hell no. Oh my God, why did I marry this man? Get me out of here.
Well, which you kind of heard that to begin with anyway.
No, but it would have been a very different light, I think, had this episode been taken from her perspective and had we been able to brood with her, because that's the feeling you got in the books. In the books, it was very different. Anyway, so that's why I think that they took it from Jamie's perspective. So I don't know if the rest of the season will be from his perspective. If it is, then Outlander book fans, we're just going to be very, very excited to see that, because a lot of things happened to Jamie that we didn't get to necessarily see.
Well, I was going
to
say, I thought you were going to go the other way with this and say, I'm going to be really upset if it's Jamie for the rest of the season.
No, because I already know what Claire saw. I already know what she was thinking. I'm really excited to hear all this.
One of the really cool things that happened, too, was Jamie's voiceover. It is the first few words are verbatim with Claire's voiceover from Sassenach, the first episode. In Sassenach, what she says is, strange, the things you remember, the single images and feelings that stay with you down through the years. Like looking at a shop window with the sudden realization that you've never owned a vase in your entire life. Now, in this episode, in Reckoning, Jamie's voiceover says, strange, the things you remember, the people, the places, the moments in time burned into your heart forever, while others fade into the mist. I've always known that I've lived a life different from other men. When I was a lad, I saw no path before me. I simply took a step and then another, ever forward, ever onward, rushing towards some place I knew not where. How cool is that? They're both talking about choices in home. She is saying, I want to be somewhere. I need something stable in my life. And Jamie, when he was young, is saying, I just lived my life. I was going out and around, and I was just running. I didn't even know where I was going. I had all these different choices, and I was just making them, and I didn't even know what to do. But in the end, they're both coming back and saying, but I have to find something stable. Really cool stuff. And I applaud Ron Moore and Matthew B. Roberts, who is the writer of this episode, who also happened to write The Gathering, too, in the first season 1A. I give them a lot of credit for doing this. Because now, again, you're getting Jamie's point of view as if it is his story. It's not just Claire's story anymore. They share the same ideals now. Because they're married. And I know I've said this already, but it should be that way. You deserve both halves of their story. Just as you deserved Frank's side of the story in the beginning part in season 1A. Because he and Claire are married too. I think that's the idea behind this.
Wow, I didn't even think about it that way, but that's really deep.
It's because I'm awesome.
Obviously. That's why I married you. Wow. Okay, so getting back to the recap, we get to see Jamie with Horrocks. I don't know about you, but I don't really care about that stuff. Yeah. I'm like, listen, we just left a big cliffhanger at the end of the first part of the season. Let's get there. So we're going to get there, okay? Let's just head on over to the fort. So Jamie gets there. He does this really cool whistle thing, like, I can't do
this
it.
This is in the Wild West.
I can't do it. I can't. I just hit the microphone.
Hey, hit the mic while you're at it, too.
I'm terrible at it. Anyway, so...
You couldn't rescue Claire, I'll tell you that.
I would have fallen off those rocks. Well, Jamie, along with all of his Mackenzie clan, you know, they storm the fort. And they don't kill anyone in the process, which blew my mind.
Right.
Because if I was there, I would have been freaking out. I would have been like, cut your throat, take your gun, cut your throat. Oh my gosh, I can't believe we're breaking into a fort where there are like tons and tons and tons of English soldiers.
Right. Well, you see, one of my issues with this entire scene, I had a lot of issues with this scene, but one of my issues was there wasn't a whole lot of guards out there protecting the place. I mean, there were like four or five guys. That was it. And are you telling me a bunch of ragtag Scots are going to go over there and take over this, and capture this woman from the garrison commander's grip?
They were just really lucky. That's in my opinion. Well, they were lucky.
And this is my issue too. Here we go. BJ Ayer is a smart dude, right? He knows what he's getting into, right? Why would he not have more guys posted out? I mean, he knows he has Claire. He knows he has her. And he knows that people are going to be pissed off that he has her, especially her husband now that she's married. He knows that she's married. He knows he's going to have angry Scots going after him. Why not have more guys out there? It doesn't make sense to me.
Well, because honestly, it's stupid for the Scots to go and attack the fort. Just as Colum says later, like, who's going to clean up this mess? And Jamie knows it. He said, you know, everyone's going to be coming after us now. The British, the English have like so much more fuel now to come after us. BJR has even more of a reason to come after me. I think BJR just kind of thought, listen, I've got this huge fort and I have tons of people here. And if the Scottish men are stupid enough to come here, they'll die.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I feel like it would have been harder for them to get into this fort. It's literally a fort. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, when you have a very special magic whistle, you can do superhero things, okay? You and three friends or four friends. I think he only brought three.
Yeah. Like, four dudes show up to a fort and rescue Claire. Really?
You don't mess with a man's wife.
I agree
okay?
with that. I agree.
Think about it. Like, people talk about this superhuman strength when their loved ones are in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do crazy things. That's what just happened.
I agree with that. And that's 100% true. The other thing I wonder why did Ned Gowan tell them to not kill anybody?
Because of what happened to Jamie. Jamie already has a huge price on his head because supposedly he killed an English soldier.
Yeah, sure. But whatever. I mean, they're already going into this fort. They're breaking in. They're stealing Claire. They're taking her out. They're knocking BJR out. They're knocking all these dudes out.
It would be a much more minor offense.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I get it. I do get it. But I feel like they're already going to be in deep trouble as it is.
Anyway, superhero Jamie doesn't kill anyone once again, knocks some guy out, takes a very rickety piece of wood and rope and is like, oh, it's totally long enough. I can. What is it when you like go off the side of a wall?
When you rappel?
He was rappelling. And then Claire
Expert
screams.
Expert rappeller.
Yeah. Who knew? And Claire's screaming and he gets into that window. And I loved it because for a moment he cocks his gun, but he knows there's nothing in that gun. So I thought, Jamie, why did you even take the time to cock that gun?
It's for effect.
Yeah. So it can have like a little, you know, yeah. When someone does pull the trigger. I don't know.
Nothing is more intimidating. And I'm 100% behind this idea. Literally, there is nothing more intimidating than the cocking of a gun. That sound, that sound, when you hear that, you know stuff's going down.
Yeah.
You know someone's serious.
Yep.
I think that's why he did it. I like that idea.
Okay.
But the other thing I like about this too, and this is the one thing I think I really liked about this scene, well, eventually getting into what happened with BJR and Claire and Jamie, I did like that interaction. But I really appreciated the fact that they included why and how Jamie found Claire, because in this mid-season finale he just shows up and you're like, oh man.
And that's how it is in the book.
Really? He just shows up. He just happens to know where she is and he happens to know what window it's in. Come on now. But they actually gave some context and they showed you how it got done. I like
that. Yeah, they got to explain it a lot more, because when you're originally reading the book, that's what you read.
And that's it? They don't show you like how he got there?
Well, it's
or nothing?
Not from Jamie's perspective. He can explain later, but as you're reading it, no, it's totally from Claire. So, you know, he gets in there and the whole little interaction, and Blackjack Randall said a few things in there that I'm interested to see if you picked up on.
What was that? What do you got?
What was he saying when he was kind of like holding a knife to Claire's throat and Jamie had his gun pointed at him? What did you pick up in there?
Well, that he wanted to do it in front of them and he wanted Jamie to join.
Okay.
That's what I picked up on.
Yeah, there's another thing.
Oh, why would somebody ever give their life or something to that effect to just a woman? Never mind this whore.
Why anyone would pleasure themselves to a woman?
Yeah. So what's that saying?
What does that say, Blake?
What that says to me?
Yeah.
The man likes dudes.
Bingo.
Wow. Totally never would have gotten this.
Yes.
Never would have gotten this.
And you get this in the book because Claire talks about how he never gets aroused while he's trying to attempt to rape her.
Then I wonder, what is it, just the intimidation factor of trying to rape her?
Because he's going to rape her bum.
Oh, okay.
And maybe he wouldn't, but I mean, he didn't do it. And in the books, he couldn't do it.
Wow, this is amazing.
So
you know, the funny thing is I did catch that, but I thought, like, the way I interpreted it was, why would anybody do this with a woman? Why am I going to waste my time with women? Not like, oh, I like dudes, but like, I just don't have time for women. I don't have time to just waste my time on them.
So that's why he's saying, oh, Jamie, do you want to watch? Or how about, better yet, do you want to get in on this?
Oh, my God.
And then he's saying, I don't even know why people like girls, especially foul-mouthed girls.
Like her.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. This adds a whole nother layer to BJI.
And aren't you glad that I'm able to open this door to you? Because you couldn't... we watched it twice. And the first time we saw it, I like casually glanced over at Blake. And he didn't react. And I thought, okay, that went under the table. And then this time, same thing. And it made me wonder how many viewers who haven't read the books, who mm-hmm. don't know this, because Claire is very... very descriptive, and she's like, he's not aroused. And she even says it to him. She like makes fun of him. She's like, oh, look at you. You don't get aroused by me. Yeah. So I wanted to see how they kind of played this off in the show. And I worried that it was a little too little of a remark, that it might be missed by many people.
No. And you see, now that is something that I can appreciate. It's not in your face. And it's not, I don't think it's not that they don't want to approach that subject. I think that they do. Why be so on the nose? You know, one of my complaints about the show a lot of the time is that it is so on the nose all the time. They hold your hand throughout the show all the time. And now you're finally alluding to something, even so much so that I didn't even get it. And I'm the kind of viewer that wants that kind of storytelling.
Yep.
I like that a lot.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Good pick.
Oh,
great
yes.
pick.
Well, that wasn't one of your outlandish theories, I tell you what.
No, it was not. So, wow.
One of the things that I was so shocked by was Blackjack takes the gun and fires it at Jamie. He's like, I'm going to kill you now. Boom. Except it doesn't go off. So Blackjack totally was cool with just shooting and killing Jamie right then and there.
Right then and there.
Yeah.
I think in the end, he probably just wants to kill Jamie regardless. Whether or not he wanted him to join or not, I think in the end, Jamie was dead. But one thing I do want to say about this is... It was almost violating seeing Claire and her being nude the way that she was. You know, and normally, hey, listen, I'm a guy. Am I going to be happy if I see a beautiful woman nude? Yes, of course. But she was nude for so long, and the way that she was being manhandled,
yeah.
It was almost like, ooh, this doesn't feel right. I don't like watching this.
Which is good, because that's exactly what they wanted to get across.
Yes, it is supposed... to be dangerous.
And uncomfortable. I agree.
And another thing I noticed too was BJR asking Jamie to see the damage on his back from the lash.
Yes.
That he did to him. Loved that. God, BJR is a character. I know I fawn all over this all the time, but he is such a great character. Little nuances like that. Oh, can I see your back? Or the way he asks Jamie to join in, or let's get the party started, or stuff like that. The way that his interactions are with the two of them, mm-hmm. it's gold.
And this is when he realizes that this is Claire's husband. He didn't know who Claire married before.
Exactly. And did you see his, like, when he laughed, he's like, oh my God, I can't believe it's you. Of course it's you. Why wouldn't it be you? This causes so much problems for Jamie and Claire now.
Yep.
Not only does he have it in for Claire, we all know that he's got it in for Claire. But now he knows that Claire is married to Jamie. Like, it's like a perfect storm. I feel like I'm going to go see Mark Wahlberg and George Clooney will come walking through here in the fishing boat, because it's such a perfect storm for BJR.
I'm just biting my tongue, and book readers, they're just biting their tongues with me right now. I don't really know what to say. So, you know, BJR tries to shoot him. Doesn't work. Jamie gets the upper hand, knocks him out, doesn't kill Blackjack Randall.
Okay, why are we not killing BJR? Why is that happening?
Because Ned said don't kill anybody.
I know, but you and I both know that Jamie knows that BJR knows this is more personal now.
Yep.
This is way more personal now. He even says so.
I'm telling you, man, if that had been me, I would not have played it cool. I would have been slitting throats.
Even if they did kill BJR, right? Even if he did do it. I mean, granted, there would be pretty much no story going forward, I imagine. But even if he did do it, it's not going to raise an alarm because the guy's already knocked out, right? No one's going to know. And they don't have this person coming after them anymore. So even if they kill him, who cares if they kill an English soldier?
It just wasn't on the top of his head, you know? It wasn't on the top of his mind at all. He just wanted to get the heck out of Dodge.
I get it, but oh, God, come on, man. Kill that man.
Well, probably there's this little part of Jamie, the good angel on Jamie's
shoulder.
Well,
I was just going to ask that. Is it his innocence that prevents him from killing Blackjack Randall?
I think that there was definitely some of that, and he just saw it as a moment of, hurry up, let's go. And they run down the stairs, kick those soldiers in the face. The alarm goes off.
Well, would you have blamed him for killing Blackjack Randall?
No, you just heard me. I said I'd be cutting throats. Granted, I've never
cutting throats everywhere.
I don't even know how
blood
to cut
would
a throat.
Sprawled out over all the walls.
Yeah, if I was in that situation, I would do whatever I needed to do to get out of there.
Mary should be on SEAL Team 6.
I know. I'm like Jack Bauer, man. Don't let me inside that fort. So Jamie and Claire get out. They kick people because that's what you do. Mm-hmm. Once again, I would have been like, jugular, boom, knife, get out of here. And they're running around, running in the dark. Then the explosion goes off. Blake's favorite part.
Wait, what the heck is this? It's just things explode. Oh my God! We need fireworks. It didn't make any sense whatsoever. And I know that Angus went ahead later on in the episode saying, "Oh, I did the gunpowder and this," but it just didn't make any sense.
Well, it's not supposed to. I think you're taking it from Jamie's perspective, which is chaos, run, let's get out of here. An explosion went off. Awesome. Let's keep getting out of here.
But even then, right? Like where they were. And where they were in relation to the explosion and where they were when they were coming down the tower, it wasn't cut. It wasn't edited properly or it wasn't shot properly.
So you just didn't know where you were.
I had no context. You know, like one of the things like that comes up against Christopher Nolan, the guy who directed the Dark Knight movies, a lot of people say that his fight scenes were just too chaotic. He didn't know how to place the camera. He didn't know how to shoot certain fight scenes. And I felt like that this was happening in this scene. Nobody knew like where to place the camera, so you knew where you were at all times. It just felt like they were just running and all of a sudden they were downstairs and then they were in front of the ocean and then they were going to jump. It just, I didn't like that.
So you had beef with the explosion. I had beef with the jump. You ready?
Oh, yes. Give it to me.
Anyone who's gotten wet in water with clothes on knows that it's really difficult to swim with clothes on. Did you see how much clothes those two people had on?
That was a lot of clothing.
And she had even her cloak. Okay, they made this huge leap of faith into the water. They would have drowned.
Of course they would have drowned.
You have too much heavy wool that was, you know, soaked in pee a long time ago. All right, you are going to drown. Take off your clothes, and yet later we see them riding at dawn on their horses with all their clothing.
Yeah. And where do they meet up with all their guys? You know, they don't have like they don't have like hypothermia.
They did their little whistle. They did the little whistle, and they magically survived with all their heavy clothes.
Well, later on, it's snowing later on in the episode. Are you telling me that it went from 60 degrees one day to 32 degrees the next day?
What made you say 60?
Well, you know what I mean.
Baby, have you been here in Rhode Island?
Oh, what I'm saying is
okay.
This.
Scotland can have crazy weather, just like Rhode Island.
But the thing is this: it's got to be cold. It's got to be the winter time, right?
Yeah.
And even if it is winter time, there's no way it's going to be 60 degrees in wintertime. We don't have 60 degree weather on Rhode Island during the winter. It doesn't happen.
The snow didn't bother me because we just had a lovely week last week and then it snowed.
But the snow doesn't bother me either. What bothers me is that it's going to be cold there regardless, especially in the morning.
Yeah.
And they're not suffering overnight from hypothermia. It might be just being a little too picky.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. That's why I had problems with the water. And I think you're agreeing with me to some regard.
I am, actually.
They wouldn't have really lasted.
Okay.
But, once again, Super Jamie, he goes into superhero mode to save his wife. Who knows? Maybe he was like, I have thermal underwear on. It's totally okay. I have a swimsuit. What are those swimsuits that surfers wear? Like wetsuit. I have a wetsuit. Here's one for you, too.
What, did he get it from Nick Zappos?
Of course. Overnight shipping. He needed that stuff fast, man.
1 horsepower.
Okay, so they're riding at dawn. Beautiful water shots once again. It was like a really cool water shot. Like the camera was actually on the water.
Yeah, and it tracked over the river.
Yeah, as the horses were walking on. So mm-hmm. I really liked that. And Jamie takes Claire for a talk. And the first thing he asks her is she all right?
Which is great.
Yes.
Did he hurt you? Is everything fine? It reminds me of like, hey, is everything fine? Okay, everything's good. Now I'm going to lay into you.
That's what I do when I have to talk to you about something serious.
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, hey, how are you doing today? Are you doing all right? Good, because we have to talk. All right? So Jamie, little did he know, he was pulling like a serious marriage move by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Checking out. Are you all right? Did he do anything to you? Okay, you're fine. Where's my apology? I haven't heard it, haven't seen it. I don't know what's going on.
Is Jamie right or wrong for asking for an apology?
He's totally right.
You think so?
Yep.
Why do you think he's right?
Because Claire shouldn't have gone. She really shouldn't have left, in his opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And now all these guys endangered themselves. Had Claire gone through the stones and none of this happened, gone back to Frank, whatever. She can't apologize at that point. But he's kind of right. He told her to stay put. They're in like red coat country.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very dangerous world. And these few Mackenzie guys were able to save the day with an explosion that we can't fully explain. All to save her butt. And she has no apology. She doesn't think what she did was wrong.
But you can't blame her for going, though, right?
No, but she can't say anything. So it's difficult because she can't even say, there's a reason, but I can't tell you.
Yeah.
She can't even do that,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I do. I think that Jamie's right to ask for an apology.
I don't know. I mean, I think he is right, but to ask for an apology is a little tough for me, because you have to, dude, pick your battles. You just rescued your wife from this insane man who apparently likes dudes, which is cool. I'm fine with that. But pick your battle.
You know what it's like? It's like telling someone, hey, I think your tire's flat. I think you should really check your tire. I think you should check your tire. And then that person gets a flat tire and they're like stuck on the side of the road and then the friends have to go save them. And they're like, hey, you know, I kind of told you so.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Jamie's saying right now. I kind of told you so.
Well, okay. This scene, and I'm going to say this out of all peace and love, this scene felt really real to me. The wording, the dialogue was a little on the nose for me. You can't tell me what to do! You know, like, I'm just a woman then! You know, like, that to me felt a little on the nose. They could have attacked those themes of women's rights, and they could have attacked the roles between male and female, whether it's in the 40s or in the 1740s. They could have attacked that a different way. But the emotion behind the words, the way they were reacting to each other so viscerally,
mm-hmm.
that felt real to me. That felt like a married couple, someone who is just on fire. And okay, again, in all peace and love, Mary and I got into a big fight however many months ago, and I forget what it was about, and it got really ugly. Like we were yelling at each other and swearing and going crazy.
Oh, I know what it was about.
Yeah. Well, what was it about?
No.
Okay. Well, yeah, let's go. We're already talking about it.
It's okay. Continue. Yes. There was some foul language.
There was a lot of foul language.
I did my best Claire
impression. Yes, she did. You effing bastard! You know, like that happened. And Mary's like, I'm getting out of here, and I'm taking Reese, and I'm going, and I'm going somewhere. And I'm like, good, I don't care where you're going. Get out of here. You know, like, I was all mad. And I was saying things that I would never, ever say to my darling wife. But I was just so freaking wrapped up in what was happening, it got out of control. I mean, like this. It was a train that just kept chugging down the road. And despite the fact that I didn't like the dialogue in this scene, I really felt for Jamie. I really felt for him. And I can officially say that I think I'm on board the Jamie train, because it finally shows me that he's a real man.
Yeah. Yep.
He's a real man. He is stubborn, and he's dumb a little bit too. You know what I mean? And he gets pissed off, and he calls her a foul mouthed bitch. Like, what? Jamie, the perfect man, says this to Claire? Really? And I really like that. I really like the visceral nature of the conversation that they were having. It felt so horrible to hear him call her that. You know, it felt like a violation. You're supposed to fall in love with Jamie and Claire as a couple. And here they are speaking to each other like that.
Well, and that's, I think you hit the nail on the head. This is when you get to a very serious part in a relationship, whether it's marriage or just a relationship or even something with your family, the people that you care about the most, you can hurt the most.
Oh, yeah.
You know how to rip them a new one.
Mm-hmm.
Like
ups
no
and
one
downs.
Else can.
Oh, God, yeah. And then when Jamie finally sits down and he realizes that they both kind of crossed the line, they both said things that they shouldn't have said, he just sits down, he goes on the rocks. And it's such a desperate, desperate feeling that he has. And as a man, I can feel for him when he says,
I went here for William. Armed with an empty pistol in my bare hands. When you screamed, my guts out, Claire.
Oh, the best little line right there.
It really was. Oh my God, like, as a man, you do anything for your wife. I would literally travel through hell in a gas suit if I have to make sure my wife is taken care of. And literally he did that. Yep. Pretty much he did that. And here she is, and here they are, fighting after this. And you know, you can't really blame them for fighting that the way that they did, because emotions are so high. The adrenaline is pumping. You can't there's nothing right about the situation at that very moment. They're going to go at it. But to hear how desperate and how vulnerable he was by just telling her, I did everything I could for you, and you're just tearing me apart inside. I don't know what to do going forward. It takes a big man to admit that. It takes an emotional man to admit that.
I was just going to say, he is a big man.
Yeah. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Time out. What are we getting at here?
I don't know. I don't know about that member. I did like that they forgave each other. And this scene, I don't know if I agree with you about the dialogue. You know, often when you do fight, it's not your most eloquent speech. You know, you don't have all these hidden meanings. It's pretty basic when you're mad at somebody.
Yep.
And this was their first really big fight. It's a really big deal. Really big deal to have that fight and to get over it. And it's tough because they just got married. So they're already fighting when they're married. It's like, often you get this, maybe if you've been in a relationship, a lot of people get into huge fights when they're engaged,
mm-hmm.
you know, when emotions are high and they're exhausted and everything, and people get into really, really big fights, and then you learn to forgive, you learn to move on. And so I thought that this was huge, and heck yeah, Jamie.
Huge in what way? For forgiving Claire?
And huge on both of their parts.
Okay.
Huge for their marriage. Huge for their relationship. Yep. I think that this was a milestone. Whenever I talk to friends who are newly married or even engaged, or maybe even they're just dating and things have gotten very serious and they get to that first really big fight.
Mm-hmm.
They get to the thing that you were talking about where they might call each other names or they might storm out on one another and not talk for a while. And they think, is this over? I say, nope, it's not. This is your first really big test. And when you get through this test and you learn to forgive each other, you're going to open up all these doorways that you didn't even know existed because you're learning how to work with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Claire and Jamie had to do in this episode, was learn how to work with each other.
And that's why I loved that voiceover that we played at the beginning of the episode when he was saying, I already forgave her. I forgave her for everything that she did and everything that she was going to do. That wasn't what it was. It was falling in love. And that is falling in love. When you realize, no matter what, Mary could do anything and she could piss me off to like no end. And she knows. I'm just talking to the listeners. Sorry. She could do anything and she knows exactly what to do to get me going. But no matter what she does, no matter what happens, I love my wife more than anything. And no matter what you say, no matter what we do, nothing's ever going to change that. I mean, unless you run away with Jamie or whatever.
Hey.
But nothing's going to change that. And that's a huge step. I mean, can we really go over this real quick? For a marriage to work, you have to be able to say, no matter what, I forgive you.
Well, let's move to the next step for a second.
Okay.
Because Jamie was able to forgive,
mm-hmm.
but the rest of the Klansmen were not.
No, they weren't. They mean girl. This was like the Plastics 2.0.
Yes.
Plastics 2.0, like Scotland version.
Yes. You know what this one was? This one was like Never Been Kissed. What are the mean people like in that one?
Why are we talking about Drew Barrymore in this podcast?
It's amazing. You know what I'm talking about. When she joins the cool kids and like they don't want to talk to the nerdy girl, the girl that pretends to be a piece of DNA.
Oh my God.
Anyway.
I can't believe we're talking about this movie.
Poor Claire was just trying over and over again. Hey guys, wanted to say thank you. Oh yeah, that was pretty cool when you blew everyone up, Angus. Guys, can you hear me? Crickets, okay? They were giving her serious cold shoulder. And then Murtaugh pretty much tells Jamie, you need to go teach your wife a lesson.
Sure.
So Jamie comes up, and poor Jamie. Here he is in the 1740s, thinking whipping's a totally normal thing. He's like, hey, girl, what's going on? She's like, hey, you want to come to bed? He's like, in a minute, all right?
Hey, are you okay? Oh, good, because guess what?
All right, so hope you had a really good dinner, and this shouldn't take too long. Belt unbuckling.
We got to figure some stuff out.
Okay.
Tell me how you would react.
To what? If you took off your belt?
No. If you were in 1743 Scotland, and Jamie's sitting right in front of you, the big hunk of a man that he is, and he starts undoing his belt saying, we got to figure some stuff out, girl.
Okay, am I a time traveler who knows that this is not okay?
You are in Claire's position.
Oh man.
What do you do? Do you do exactly what Claire does?
Exactly, except I would have once again gone for the jugular and then balls. Like, why go for his face?
Sure.
No, kick him in the balls. What? Claire, you should know this.
I'm never going to unbuckle my belt in front of you.
No, because I know what to do.
Oh.
I watched those, like, protect yourself, you're a woman walking through the parking lot videos.
What?
Oprah used to show these videos, like how to protect yourself. I know. Claire did not get to see those videos. So, yeah, oh. I mean, okay, let's talk about this scene. Hopefully not too much, because as I said, this is what brought it down a star for me, and not a star, a kilt for me, and this is also what was hard for you. This scene is tough because we are not from 1743.
Correct.
We do not come from this background. We come from a time when domestic assault and domestic abuse is incredibly wrong.
Yeah, I would never think to lay a hand on a woman, ever.
And it's something that we're taught as a society right now to stand up against, mm-hmm. and to feel badly about and to feel strongly about. So when I read this in the book, I didn't forgive Jamie until the end of this book. And this happens pretty early on in the book.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, this really struck a chord with me, and I held it against Jamie personally a heck of a lot longer than Claire did.
Well, can you really hold it against him? Because he, no matter what, he is a man of his time. I mean, this is how he grew up. It's how he understands things. And as much as I don't agree with it, I can't fault him for it because it's his tradition. He said himself, from his father to his grandfather to his grandfather, that's how they handle things.
And that's why this particular episode had to be said from his perspective. Because
I
had it been said from Claire's, you know, I don't think she's ever been afraid of Jamie. And he's always said, you know, you don't need to be afraid when you're around me. And yet here is this massive man trying to grab her so he can hit her with his belt, doing everything within his power to grab her. Mm-hmm. And she's fighting against him with all of her might. It would have been very, very scary. I think scary is the right word. It would have been very scary had this episode been spoken from Claire's perspective.
I think this – okay, so we've already mentioned that the spanking scene took it down a notch. So let's get into why it took it down a notch for us. At least for me, it was played off as though it was funny.
Yeah.
You know? And to me, that doesn't work for me. Because even though I don't blame Jamie for what he was doing, I can't fault him because that's what he grew up knowing and being a part of. That's his lifestyle. It's still supposed to be dangerous. It almost reminds me of 50 Shades of Grey because we went out and saw that movie. And I remember you read the book and you ended up telling me that the sex scenes, even though that they were these really hot, steamy scenes in 50 Shades of Grey, they were dangerous. There was a level of danger that the girl in Anastasia went through during them. Even though she was kind of turned on, she was scared. And even though I knew Claire was scared and she was angry and she was like, no, F you, you're not going to hit me. The fact that they played it off like it was funny and they had like the fiddle going and they were cutting back and forth between Dougal and Angus and Rupert and Murtaugh. It took away from the violation that was happening between Jamie and Claire.
And, you know, it must have been such a hard choice for Ron Moore. I was reading, because this scene bothered me so much, I read up a lot about it. And at the New York premiere, the crowd actually laughed a lot and clapped during the scenes. And that was not what Ron expected. That was not what the cast expected. It's not at all what they went for. And they still struggle with why is that the reaction? Why are people laughing? Why are people clapping? Is it because it's such an important scene? We now, at the end of the episode, you know, Jamie and Claire come to this realization that it's not going to ever enter their marriage again, that they are going to respect each other and never hurt each other like that. But it really kind of threw them for a loop because they didn't know why people acted that way. And I read about how Ron worked really carefully with Bear McCreary on the music for this scene.
Yep.
Because I was watching it the second time and I thought, okay, if I was playing serious music or if I didn't play any music at all, how scary would this scene come off?
See, now that's the thing. It should have been no music whatsoever.
And Ron said he actually sat down with women and he had them watch it without music or had the music come in later. And it was too scary for them. And they were, they had a really hard time with Jamie.
But you see, that's the point in my opinion.
But if it's taken, if this episode is from Jamie's perspective, that's where it's tough. If this episode is from Jamie's perspective, Jamie doesn't view what he's doing as scary.
Okay, I see what you're getting at. I see what you're getting at. And now that you say it like that, it does make more sense.
Yeah.
That since it's from Jamie's perspective, it's more of it's not like meant to be mean. It's not meant to be horrible. It's just meant to be like, okay.
But what's hard is that you don't have Ron Moore saying this in the beginning of the episode. I learned this because I read this and I was so intrigued and wondering why the heck was that music so upbeat? Why was it almost fun music? And some of the reactions that I read online talked about 50 Shades of Grey. Some people were like, who needs 50 Shades of Grey? We now have 50 Shades of Outlander. And I don't like that.
Neither do I, because it's not meant to be that.
And once again, you know, here we are in this society where it's almost glorifying domestic assault.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
No. 50 Shades of Grey, the girl at least is kind of asking for it. 50, this Outlander, she was not asking for it, and she was saying no.
Yeah, but I don't think it glorifies it. As a matter of fact, I think they go out of their way in the episode to...
No, I'm saying the fans that are saying this. I don't think it's Ron's fault. I don't think it's Bear's fault. I don't think it's the actors. What concerns me is the reactions from other people. I often read a lot of different people saying things like, every wife needs a good spank.
Yeah.
And things like that are what made me bring this down, because it's so hard. I don't think Ron could have done it any better or different.
I think he could have. I think, you know, again, you're getting into this idea of, okay, is it Claire's story or is it Jamie's story? And I go back and forth on this because it's both of their stories. Now, even though Jamie doesn't think of it as malicious, he doesn't think of it as like, oh my God, this is domestic abuse, it's awful. It still is regardless. And when you have this scene being played out, having this kind of happy music, it takes away from the danger. And it takes away, okay, even if it is Jamie's story, it takes away from him realizing, this is bad news. This is bad news. I shouldn't do this. I effed up big time.
He gets it by the end of the episode.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But in order for him to make a good transition from knowing that this was stupid to this is my wife and we don't operate like this, you can't have it be funny. You just can't. I cannot find a way to legitimize this being funny in any way.
And I also
can't blame the crowd over in New York for clapping or laughing during this scene, because it's the way that it's written and the way that it's cut. It's supposed to be funny the way that it seems.
It's supposed to be more light.
Yeah, and
I don't think it was meant to be funny. I think it was meant to be light.
Okay, and even then, it might have been nervous laughter. You know what I mean? Because you know how when you get into a situation and you just, okay, what do I do? So I just laugh. I don't know what to do. It might have been nervous laughter too.
If it's anything like these comments that I've been reading, I don't know. Anyway, the guys downstairs hear all of this going on. Dougal says it's Jamie's duty and that she won't make that mistake again.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, Claire come downstairs afterwards and gets herself some porridge and pouts in the corner because she can't sit. Her bum hurts too much after all that spanking. And the guys kind of like laugh at her. Whatever. Bullies. Once again, never been kissed. Okay. Now we're at Castle Leoc.
Yes. Finally, the triumphant return.
And triumphant it was.
Yes.
Open those doors and you have Mad Claire with a sore bum. She just had to ride a horse.
That whole long way, I didn't even think about that.
Oh, I did. I did. Oh my gosh, I would want some ice packs under there, some like aloe vera gel. I don't even know. So she comes in, everyone's cheering, very excited. Congrats to you both.
Colm walks in.
By the way, my autocorrect hates Colm's name.
Really?
Because I take notes on my iPad. Mm-hmm. Usually it puts in Colin. But for this particular part, it called him Columbus. I put Columbus is super quiet and awkward. No, Columbus was not there. He was a few hundred years before.
He'd already lived and died.
Yeah, anyway.
The look of disappointment on Colum's face, it was telling. And it was the way that he was like, oh, congratulations to you and yada yada. It was almost said like...
But he just says it to Claire. He congratulates only Claire.
Sure, exactly. But it's almost like F you, congratulate. Like it's almost like it's a backhanded compliment, in my opinion.
It's like when my mom tells me that something's very interesting. My mom told me this code word, guys. She told me that sometimes when she talks with people that she works with and she doesn't really like what they say, she goes, interesting.
Interesting,
Mary. She forgot that she told me this code word. So occasionally we have conversations where I'll be like, oh, mom, you know, Blake and I are doing this, or we're thinking about planning a trip, or we're having a baby. Interesting.
Interesting, Mary.
And I'm like, shoot. I know what that means.
What did I do wrong?
My mom's giving me the Colm treatment. Oh, man. Anyway, we're going to skip forward to Leg Hair, otherwise known as Leary. But if you haven't read the books, the way they spend that Diana spells Leary is it looks like leg hair.
It's exactly leg hair.
It's amazing. Anyway, she tells Jamie that she waited for him. Now, Jamie looks very kindly at her. And I, if I were Jamie, I would have looked at her and been like, we waited for what? We kissed. We like made out once.
What are you talking about?
I was drunk. What are you doing?
And you see, this is the thing. Jamie isn't owning his actions here. He's not telling her, listen, I'm married now and I love my wife. He leads her on. It's oh, we're going to talk.
He touches her shoulder.
Yeah. Like, what are we talking about here? Why would you, what makes you, what in what world? Is this okay?
And he doesn't say, I'm happy with my marriage, because he isn't. He just had to spank his wife and she's not, you know, doing her.
But whatever. He doesn't even say, I'm happily married to my wife. He says, it was Dougal's doing.
Yep. Blames it on Dougal and touches her shoulder. Now, let me tell you guys, when Blake and I got serious, I had to lay the law down. I said, listen, Blake, it's not that I don't trust you. It's that I don't trust other women.
Mm-hmm.
And if you touch a woman and she's vulnerable or giving her like heartbreak story to you and you do a little comforting thing, she's going to take it and run with it.
Of course she is.
So hands off. And at first you were like, oh my God, what do you mean? I said, don't you dare comfort women when they have male problems or they're lonely and they want a man, any of this kind of stuff. Once you are taken, nope. You walk away. And this is exactly what Leary's doing. And poor Jamie didn't have this conversation.
He fell into the trap, too.
Touches her freaking shoulder.
What are you thinking, bro?
He's not.
He's clearly not an experienced married man.
He's a weasel, and that's exactly what Colin calls him. A weasel. He's not a weasel.
He's not a weasel.
I'm kidding.
It's what he did was weaselish.
You know, it was naive. It was just naive. It wasn't weaselish.
But he didn't own his actions.
I just wanted to throw in the word weasel. I'm taking it totally back. He doesn't even know. Jamie is so young. Jamie is really a young man. He was a virgin before he was with Claire. I don't even know like his serious relationship nature, if any. I mean, he's been on the road with guys all the time.
Sure.
So he doesn't know. And here he is. Here's Leary. And she's upset. And he doesn't want to hurt anyone's feelings. He can't even kill Blackjack Randall.
And this goes back to my whole idea about the water and the path of least resistance type deal. He's not taking ownership. Just tell the girl, hey, man, I'm married. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you're upset. And I'm sorry that things are happening the way that, you know, you don't want them to happen. But, hey, I got to own it. I'm married now, and no, we're not going to talk, and no, we're not going to show up in the middle of some river where I'm skipping rocks looking all sexy, because you're not worth it to me. You're not worth my time. You're not going to put any of this stuff in danger for me.
Let's talk about that river scene. Let's fast forward a little bit. We'll come back to
the weasels. Okay. That's a good band name. Call 'em and the Weasels.
Would be. They were like an Outlander-inspired band.
Call 'em and the Weasels. You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Harry and the Potters.
Oh, such a good wizard rock band.
Yes. The Wizard Harry.
Oh, look at you. You did it.
I did it.
You did it this time.
Oh.
Okay, so there's, you know, Jamie skipping his rocks, doing his thing. And Leary comes up and she's like, oh, this has been your secret hiding place forever. Okay, how long have you been stalking Jamie? What is going on? Once again, he made out with you once when he was drunk.
It's like Poison Ivy, that movie. Oh, it's another Drew Barrymore movie. What are we doing with Drew Barrymore today? Oh, my God.
Where is Leary's undershirt?
Oh, my God.
She forgot a step in her clothing.
Boobs were going all over the place.
Okay, let's talk about the boobs. Because she will, you know, lets Jamie touch her boob.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't take his hand off.
No, he doesn't.
Even when he's saying no,
mm-hmm.
his hand kind of lingered there for a while.
He's like, oh, no, that sucks. No, I don't want to do that. Grab. No, it sucks. Grab.
And she, you know, I get your hand off of her. Get your hand off of Leary.
Weaselish.
Oh, no.
That's weaselly. Come on now.
Okay, keeping his hand on her boob.
That's weaselly.
That was a little weaselly.
Thank you.
I would agree.
Thank you.
I would agree. Jamie, you're dumb. You're dumb right here, okay?
But this is why I can actually finally get behind Jamie. Not because I approve of what he's doing, but because at least this is showing he's real. He's not some statue. He's not the guy that's in the Leonardo da Vinci painting of the perfect man, you know, with the circle around
him. Which is what
you've
been saying he's been coming off as.
Of course he has been coming off as this.
Okay.
You know, he's finally not that. And damn it, that's awesome. Finally.
He's a real man.
He's something that I can get behind
now.
He
tells Leary that he made a vow and he's not going to break it, even for a lass as bonny as you. Now, he compliments her pretty much while his hand is still on her boob. I think his hand might have come off by that point. But it's like, Jamie, you don't tell a woman, sorry, I don't want to be with you, I'm married, while you've touched her boob and you're saying that she's hot. Like, that is mixed signals, okay? If I was Leary, who'd been obsessed with him since I was 7, stalking him in a skipping rock place, and he kept his hand on my boob, and he was like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm married, touch boob, but you're really hot, I would have a little bit of mixed signals, too. I might make a little voodoo stick thing for the odd chance that it might happen again.
Oh,
okay? God. Don't lead her on.
I love you so much.
It's true. Oh. Take your hand off of her.
Touch boob.
And you're hot. Oh, okay, we'll go back to the weasels.
Oh, Colum and the Weasels. This is great. I love this name.
Colum calls Ned, Dougal, and Jamie
all together. Just for what they're doing. And it was great because he's just waiting for them to step in it. He's waiting for them to be like, okay, guys, who's going to answer for all of this? Who's the one who decided to do this? And will we, the Mackenzie clan, have to deal with the repercussions of this?
AKA that wonderful explosion.
Yeah, that didn't make any sense.
No. Oh, and by the way, what's this money I hear you're raising for the Jacobite army that I don't approve of?
Yeah. Okay. What? Most of you guys know, I work with my family, and my dad is my boss, and it's a tough situation. It can be great, and it can really suck bad. So a couple of weeks ago, there was a situation where we had to make some decisions, and my father wasn't consulted because for extraneous reasons, doesn't really matter. When he comes back, and he comes back from vacation, he comes home, and he sees some of the decisions that we made, and he's like, "Why didn't anybody consult me?"
And you chose Polly.
Yeah, I know. And he said, why do I have to pay for decisions that aren't mine? You guys are doing this without my knowledge, and I have to answer for it. I'm the one that has to answer to the people that we have to answer to. Not you. You're not responsible. I am. So I really felt for Colum in this situation because here he's got these guys making decisions without him, doing the things that they got to do without him, yet he's the one who's in charge. He's losing control of his own clan. And I felt terrible for him. I don't blame him for going nasty on those guys, especially Jamie, too.
Yeah.
I don't blame him. Now, I mean, for him to assume that Jamie was part of the ruse or part of the...
He was mad at Jamie because of the Ford. That's what... he had two different issues he had to work on.
Sure, yeah, yeah. And then the whole gold thing, it's another situation where who in the world says it's okay for you to go collect money to support Bonnie Prince Charlie? This is still my clan. It's under my rule, and I am the one who decides who and what we support. Dougal, go F yourself and don't ever come back here thinking that you can make the decisions on who gets this money. It's my money.
And little did he know that by pretty much flexing his muscles, what little muscles poor Colum has, he was going to piss off Dougal. And Dougal was like, oh yeah? Well, I fight your army battles and I raise your money. Oh, and I assured your bloodline. Mic drop.
Boom. See, I told you he wasn't, Hamish wasn't Colum's kid. That was totally Dougal's kid. I called it from the beginning.
Well, good job.
That was an outlandish theory of the week made true. Ta-ting! Yeah, girl.
You and Claire both get a sticker this week, okay? Your theories came true.
Right there. A winner! Like that. Just like that.
In my notes, it says, Columbus is so mad. Anyway, Colum, of course. Not Columbus. Stupid autocorrect.
Columbus.
Oh, unbelievable. In addition to this, he's so upset with Jamie because not only has all this stuff gone down at the fort, mm-hmm. but he's married an English woman.
oh my God, and who saw this coming? Colm wanting Jaime to be the new Laird. Who, I mean, I always had an idea that Jaime was going to be the new Laird some way or somehow. Like, it seemed as though it was going down that track, especially during the fealty speech when both Colm and Jaime were walking, I'm sorry, when both Dougal and Jaime were walking up to Colm at the same time. It felt like, okay, this is going to be a deal that's going down. And it felt like they were both going to be the Laird, or they were going to vie for it. But who knew that Colm wanted Jaime to succeed him? And with that in mind, it doesn't feel right what's happening in this episode between Colm and Jaime. It seems like Jaime is like a personal advisor almost to Colm. Like when Jamie's talking about Dougal, saying, "Oh, let him play the rebel. Let him do all this. Let him do that. He'll be fine. And it's all about peace." And Colm's like listening to this guy. From the way that the show was written in season 1A, Jamie's a stable boy. He's not taking oaths and he's not inside these conversations. He's going working with horses. When all of a sudden did he become this special advisor?
He's working with the horses right now because he's outlawed.
Yeah, but
because there's a bounty on his head. He is Colm's nephew. He's Colm's sister, who Colm loves, mm-hmm. son.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a smart head on his shoulders.
Yeah, I agree. But at least in terms of the way that the show was written, it just doesn't seem like if you had seen a previous scene of Jaime talking to Colm in a manner like this at Castle Leok before they took off to go get Rent, it would make sense.
Well, I think if you put like Jaime next to someone with the intelligence of, say, Angus, mm-hmm. you know, Colm doesn't really have that many bright people around him.
I would agree with that.
And the ones that he did, he now doesn't trust because they're weasels.
Yep, I agree.
So here he is being open and honest with Jaime. And he is able to share, hey, I kind of had this hope that you could possibly be Laird.
Well, the way that they talked about it, it was almost as if Jaime knew in advance. You know, it was almost like Jaime knew Colm's plan before any of this went down. Because it wasn't, you didn't see shock on Jamie's face. You didn't see like, oh my God, like really? That's what you want? Jaime was like, I know, but I didn't mean it to be like that. It just kind of happened. So it alludes to the fact that Jaime already knew. And if that's the case, it seems like it's out of left field almost.
Well, I think you also need to remember that Colm is very ill,
mm-hmm.
Because he does have a son, but that son is very young.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they don't highlight it that frequently, but Colm, I think, always has in the back of his mind, I might not be here for much longer,
mm-hmm.
and I need to figure this out while I still can.
And here's the bigger question. Did Dougal know of this plan beforehand, before having Jaime get married to Claire? Did he purposely do it? I mean, I know we talked about this last season. Did he purposely do it to ensure the fact that nobody would be on board with Jaime being the Laird?
Dougal looks out for Dougal.
Yeah.
I will say that.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting at. And I had a feeling at the time that Dougal was setting all this up just to screw with Jaime. Just to put him in a position that was weaker than what he had.
Dougal doesn't have anyone's back but his own.
Oh, yeah.
I will say that. Well, let's stay on this. I mean, Jaime is the one that is able to help convince Colm that peace is the right idea.
Mm-hmm.
And from that, it's like this little light bulb goes off in his head where he's like, whoa, compromise. Wow, how do you say that in Gaelic? I don't even know. I should try it with my wife.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and he's a better man for it. He's a better man for it. But before we get into that, I just want to say this real quick. The politics here about the Jacobite Revolution and now the split between the Mackenzies and the Frasers, it happened very quickly. It's almost as if that stuff was already underlying in what's happening. You know what I mean? It was almost already there.
I think it's just to show you that tensions, like emotions, are really tense.
Mm-hmm.
for them to be like, oh, are you on the Mackenzie side? Are you on the Fraser side? They're just trying to figure things out, and everyone's really tense. And the storm is brewing. That's what you need to get out of this.
Yeah.
Is that the Jacobite storm is brewing. Nobody really knows where everyone stands, and they're not allowed to really say it out loud and proclaim it from the hills because then they'll be traitors, which is what Colum's saying. He's like, listen, buddy, I'm not going to bring any kind of ill will against the people I'm in charge of yet.
Yep.
So I don't think it's anything that you need to think about Fraser versus Mackenzie yet.
Well, but the way that they're writing it, it appears that way, because even Rupert was like, you know, and this is Mackenzie business. I think you Frasers should get out of here and take a hike, seriously.
That was him being a bully. That was him saying, like, can't sit here. it wasn't really that much deeper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they're two different families. But it's not the depth of the Jacobite kind of topic.
But you still have that divide between Colum and Dougal, you know, the chief and the war chief.
Yeah.
Which one are you going to follow here? And it seems like this is a much bigger, even though Colum gives the money back, it seems like this is going to be something that's much bigger later on down the road. It seems like it's going to come to a head sometime soon, and there's going to have to be an answer somehow. And I wonder, what's it going to be? What is this conflict between Dougal and Colum going to come to? Is it going to put Claire and Jamie in the middle? And how do they maneuver themselves in and out of that circumstance?
Well, let's leave it at that and talk about the maneuvering that Claire and Jamie did.
Oh, good transition.
Oh,
hey.
Bring it. So, of course, Jamie comes back and makes that vow to Claire. The same vow pretty much that he made to Colum.
Which was so innocent of
him. Well, he didn't do it, but other people were doing it.
It was so innocent of him being like, I don't know what to do. I always have known what to do, and I just have to figure something out now. And he goes back to the one thing that he knows, which is fealty and doing this pledge with a sword. And none of that crap matters to Claire at all, in my opinion.
Really?
I'm sure it's heartwarming. I'm sure it's like, oh, look at him. He's so cute. But that's not what Claire needs. What Claire needs is someone that's more modern. It's not, oh, give me this sword. And if I ever do that to you again and plunge it through my chest. And that doesn't impress Claire, in my opinion.
Oh, I thought it did.
Really?
Oh, she dropped her shoulder.
No. Wait a second. Hold
very
on.
Very quickly
And I'm gonna argue this point, because even Jamie was like, what? You don't want me anymore? Like, that wasn't enough?
No, this is what made her want him back.
Because
he had come in before, and she didn't want him.
Yes.
And then once he did this fealty pledge, then they kind of forgave each other. And she was like, oh, look at my shoulder. Oh, there's my boob. And Blake and I rewound and rewound and rewound this part of the scene. Blake thinks that Jamie whispers into Claire's hair, I love you so much.
Yeah, I can't breathe.
And I think he says, I want you so much, because I don't think they've said out loud to each other, I love you yet.
I don't think that they have. I went back to that scene thinking that that was the first time. Now, if they have said that I love you to each other, then we're 100% wrong, and I'm sorry for that. But I think you're right, sweetheart. I don't think I've heard any of them. Oh, I don't think I've ever heard I love you out of them.
No.
I don't think it's happened.
Outside of their little like inside their heads. So he tells Claire that she's his home now. And they talk about the key to Lollybrock.
Now that to me is what got Claire's pants all in a tizzle.
She wasn't even wearing pants.
You know what I mean. I got her undies.
She was
falling
on
the ground.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, her shift on fire. That to me was, you're my home now. That was what got her going. And you see, now I think that's the case, because that is what would have gotten me going.
Mm-hmm.
That is what Claire looks for. She couldn't get that from Frank. And as much as I love Frank, he didn't have those words for her. Whereas I think Jamie does.
So they start to have sexual relations.
Ooh, this was a good 3-minute long sex scene, by the way.
They took off their clothes very quickly. It was very rough. And then Claire all of a sudden took a knife to Jamie's throat.
I think we should use knives in bed more often, by the way.
I don't use them ever. And no, thank you. Unless they're to cut cake that I can eat while I'm in bed. Because I like cake.
Especially in bed.
oh, crumbs. Never mind. I changed my mind. Anyway, she, you know, she's holding the knife to his throat while she's thrusting him. Or he's, I don't even know. There was lots of thrusting going on.
There's just no easy way to say it.
No, there isn't. And she tells him that if he ever were to hit her again, she would cut out his heart and eat it for breakfast.
Now, what a great scene. I mean, and not only are they having sex, it's like makeup sex. You know, like that's the best kind of sex. And they're having sex, and it's love, it's passionate, and it's the one, it's the ultimate binding thing that they have. But while they're in this bound nature, she's threatening his life. She's creating life and threatening life all in the same instance.
And yet it's two very different things. So, of course, he did the spanking on her bum, you know, very raw, very naked feeling, and now they're actually having sex, doing the complete opposite, and she's telling him, if you ever do that to me again, while she's holding a knife to his throat. That's a little scary.
It was very acute, you know? It was very pointed. And I know that's on the nose a little bit, but it was exceptional how they wrote it. It was almost a little uncomfortable watching them have sex and having her point this thing at him.
I was uncomfortable. I was so uncomfortable. You gotta be careful. You're thrusting.
The amount of boobs that was shown in this episode, it was the boob count's going crazy. But it was uncomfortable, but it was supposed to be, I think. It was supposed to be loving. It was supposed to be passionate. It was supposed to be raw. And I think it achieved that. It achieved the nature of life versus death and the threat of death. And that's what Claire had to get across, because that's what they can bond over. Ultimately, they bond over with each other over sex, and how better to get that message across and how serious that message is than while they're having sex.
Once they switched positions and she was on the rug, I was like, oh no, she's going to get rug burn on her back. I was nervous for her.
And it was great because it was both their personalities, Claire on top. And then all of a sudden, as she gave way to the fact that they had finally resolved their issue, even though it was done by threat of knife, she gave way to Jamie to allow him to do what he does.
And even jokingly later called him master.
Yeah, which was great.
They had some fun little banter. She told him what fucking meant and what being a sadist meant. And then she found this really cool thing under the bed called an ill wish.
Has anybody... You haven't seen True Detective yet. No.
No.
If anybody's seen True Detective, those little ill wishes are everywhere. It's like the same exact design.
Oh, I'm so scared.
It's crazy. I was like, oh my God, did they get that from HBO? Really?
Ew, no. So, of course, she's sitting there saying, who in the world would want to bring pain, harm, or death?
And then very suspensefully, Leary.
And what it should have shown was his hand on her boob saying, Bonnie. It's your own fault, Jamie.
Well, you know what the funny thing is? Getting back to Leary, you know how he put his hand on her boob?
She put it right there, but then he kept it.
You know what I'm saying? Okay, great. He did the same exact thing to Claire.
Uh-oh.
Or he had Claire do the same exact thing to him. Hand on the heart over the same
thing.
Was that
the same day? Did he touch two girls' boobs in one day?
Of course he did.
Oh, Jamie, wash your hands. Wash your hands.
So that's the episode, guys. That's a 3.5 kilt episode for me.
4, in my opinion.
Oh, my God. All right, what do you say we get into the listener feedback?
First up, we have some emails. How about the one from Allie, Blake?
We got one from Allie, and she was saying, I'm not going to try to convince you, Blake, that Claire and Jamie are a better match, even though they are. But I'll say this one thing. Even if Frank and Claire's personalities and interests were compatible, Jamie has a big advantage on Frank. Jamie and Claire are going through a lot together, and that's one of the reasons why their bond is so strong. Facing these terrible things together. Yes, Frank and Claire lived through a war. They lived through the terrible circumstances, too, but not together. Discussions of true love and such aside, that makes all a difference in my opinion. Claire is bound to feel closer to Jamie very quickly.
It's like the movie Speed. Romantic relationships out of intense situations, right? Isn't that the whole thing? Doesn't the guy say like, oh, is this going to work? Don't you know what I'm talking about? Speed?
I know exactly. Keanu Reeves, Sandra Bullock.
Don't they actually have a conversation saying like, wow, romantic relationships when crazy things happen?
I don't remember that scene. I'm not going to lie.
Maybe that was me dreaming it.
Yeah, I think so.
Never mind. Can you delete this?
No, I'm not deleting. I'm keeping it all in.
Shoot.
You know, and Allie, I think you're right.
No, they totally talk about it at the very end of the movie. They totally talk about it when they, like, at the end, they're like, oh, I don't know if relationships work when in situations like this. Anyway, continue. They totally say it.
Between Never Been Kissed and Speed and Poison Ivy, we can't make any more random movie references. Yes, Allie, I agree, and I get it. They're going through a lot together. They're doing what they got to do with each other. It makes sense. But, okay, fine. I will admit that maybe Jamie and Claire can get closer together because they are going through this crap together. I think that's definitely possible. But, I don't know. I just love Frank.
I know, but you just said this time, now you're able to see a human side of Jamie.
She also said something else, too.
Yeah, she said that in the Rent podcast that we did, Blake, you said that Claire was stupid for telling Ned the Jacobites were going to lose against the English, because that's exactly what an English spy would say. And 10 minutes later, you wondered if she was going to change history. Well, which is it?
Well, both. Both. Are you telling me that it's smart to go tell somebody that you're going to lose? Of course it's stupid. Wait, when you're just Assassinok, just showing up in this place and you're going to lose this war. She is capable of telling them that she is capable of being stupid for saying something and also trying to change history. Can she do it? Is it territory that Ron Moore can mine? Yeah, I think so. But I don't agree with it. I don't agree with her trying to change history. It's not her position. It's not her, regardless of the reason why she went back there, whether it was God or science or the fates or whatever you want to call it. It's not her position to change history. Her position is to simply exist and do what she has to do in that life. I don't agree with her trying to do that.
We had a lot of feedback on Twitter this week.
Amanda Lee Nelson says, whoa, if I fought with my ex like that, we'd be married today. Beautifully done.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, girl, you know, you have that kind of sex after a fight, that would make you,
anyway,
want to be with the guy.
Vicky at VMR said, they're freezing her out. Highlanders meets Mean Girls. That's exactly it, Vicky. Those Highlanders are mean.
Deanna Hervey says, did Jamie really think he could jump back in the sack after he tanned her arse? Men. I love that scene when he's like getting undressed and she's like, oh yeah, no. Think again.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen.
She put on the Beyonce, to the left, everything of yours in a box to the left. She was like, you can't even get in this bed. Anyway, Crystal Schlossbinger said that it was the hottest sex scene yet. And you know what? It was pretty rocking.
It was rocking. I liked it in hot and loving are two different ways. So yeah, I would say hottest sex scene yet, definitely. Yolando at Red Hawkins says, leg hair, we've all been waiting for Jamie. To the back of the line with you.
Poor leg hair. Poor Leary.
She's got nothing going on with her life.
Calico Rose, oh look, Outlander is on again. I still have tea, biscuits, and cheese. Coincidence? I think not.
At Megara Yusu says, my mother is probably the only person in the world who prefers Frank to Jamie. What? First of all, no, your mother's not the only person. I'm that person too. So, hey, speaking of all that, by the way, do you think we're done with him for the rest of the season, or do you think we're going to see him again?
I'm not going to tell you.
You're not going to tell me?
I'm not going to tell you, Blake.
I would think it would be disingenuous to not see Frank.
Okay, well, that's your theory.
Okay, well, I mean, it's not my outlandish theory.
No, but I it's so hard for me to shut my mouth with you. Don't ask me questions.
I think we're going to see Frank again because, again, like I said with Jamie and Claire, they're married. He is as much part of the story as Claire is. They're one unit now. When you're married, you are one singular unit. You cannot negate that. It just doesn't happen.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you got for Facebook, kid?
Ellen Kalnan said it was a fabulous episode. Sam Heughan really came into his own in this episode, in particular the scene with Leary next to him. He was a 24-year-old, was a virgin until just a few days ago. Will my wife hate me forever? for the love of that is all holy boobs right here. I can have them. Boy, in that scene, right in front of us, pushed that aside. Masterful acting. I agree, Ellen, because you're right. Here he was. He gets these boobs right in front of him. He now knows what sex is. His wife's really mad at him. You know.
It's tempting. It's tempting for a guy that young to be like, this girl wants me too, and maybe, I've kind of had her before.
Maybe I'll just put my hand right there.
And I'll just hold it.
Okay.
Just, you know, one more. Trudy Miner says, I thought it was the best episode yet. The argument by the Glen was true to life. They looked really angry. The scene with the three weasels was very enlightening. It really sets the stage for later on and the Jacobite rebellion and the sibling rivalry between Colm and Dougal. Jamie's spanking scene was interesting. I thought Claire was suitably outraged when he did it, as this was something that wasn't done in the 20th century. I loved how Jamie tried to heal the breach with Claire afterwards. It was heartfelt, if not misplaced.
April Estep said, I know some fans don't like when the show strays from the books, but I like it. Also, Leary was a bit of a whore in this episode. I can't do it very well. It'll make me cough. It makes her dislike of Claire so much more dangerous and believable.
Marissa Mia Della Rosa Sutton says, I loved the twist of Colin wanting to name Jamie as his successor. Just what exactly does Colin think of Dougal that he does not think he should be the next Laird? I agree. What does Colin think of Dougal? Does he really dislike him that much? Does he really think that Colm is not worth his time? He's not good. It almost reminds me of Sonny Corleone. Sonny in The Godfather. Sonny was bad dude. And he was the oldest. He was the next in line. But he was too hot-headed. You know, and when Colm says to Dougal, someday you're going to talk your head right onto a pike. And that's exactly what happened to Sonny in The Godfather. Spoiler alert.
Ew.
He didn't go on a pike, but he got shot multiple times. He may be the brother, but he's not suited to be Laird. He's too feisty. He cares about everything else except the clan. And ultimately, when you're Laird, that's what matters most. And I can't get behind Dougal as Laird. All right, kid, what do you say we do the voicemails?
Bring them up.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, Mary and Blake. It's Cheryl from Atlanta, Georgia. It's 10:09. And please edit my message as necessary because I've had about 8 fingerfuls of Glenlivet scotch in honor of this episode. But I saw your tweet, so I'm calling. Oh, my effing God, that was a fabulous, fabulous episode. So worth the wait. And a week to wait for the next episode is now nothing compared to the months that we had to wait. So that's a positive. But anyway, I thought everything was just fantastic. I thought the spanking scene, I was so curious to know how they were going to do that, and I thought they did it brilliantly. First of all, because it was Jamie's point of view, which was great, and they were able to show how the spanking or the punishing was his duty, and they just did it really well, and I liked the lighthearted music with it. I wouldn't say they made it fun, but I don't know, it was brilliant. I think they did such a great job. And that argument scene after Wentworth, holy cow, as Diana Gabaldon says, Katrina Balfe has the most expressive chin in the world. Love it. That scene was so intense. Those actors are so good. I mean, my husband's not the book reader, so he's like you, Blake. So he's just seeing this for the first time, and I really have to keep my mouth shut. He loves it. He wells up with tears. He gasps. It's just phenomenal. Anyway, politics. The whole politics thing with the brothers, Colm and Dougal. I think it's great, and I'm just so appreciative how the Matt Roberts, I think, and you know the other scriptwriters are taking the book and finding the most important parts and points of the book and expressing them in a way that a TV audience will see how important they are. Because the politics in the book is important, but I don't know if it's emphasized or magnified as much as it is in the book as it is in the show. And it needs to be in the show because you need to retain TV viewers. And they're doing such a great job. They're making such smart decisions. And they're making a smart decision with Leary, too, although I used to call her Lago Hair, but Leary, where Leary, yes, she's important in the book, but they're making her like the main antagonist as far as the marriage. And I just think they're doing a really good job. What a little slut, though. Anyway, so it was just such a great episode. And then that scene at the end and the biting vixen, just, you know, the sex scene, holy cow. Speechless. Cold shower. Holy cow, I need a cigarette. Anyway, so those are my thoughts. I hope I made some sense. And Mary, I hope you're feeling better because it sounds like you're really sick. And I'm sorry to hear that. So I hope you're feeling better.
Hi there, this is Brenda Spetler from California, and I think that the way the show is crafted with the focus on the political intrigue helps it segue for the non-readers into the upcoming episodes, and I think it's very well done.
Hi, this is Keisha from Washington, D.C., an Outlander fan and a listener of Outlander Cast with Mary and Blake, and I just wanted to say that I loved the intense fight. It was just like breathtaking because you're seeing Claire with her 20th century values and Jamie with his 18th century values, you know, a test of wills. They're both right, but Claire is wrong. The politics, back and forth about how they played it out in the show, because I'm a book reader, but it helps the show, the people who only see it, the show, understand backstory, which I can appreciate, because we're not here just to please the book readers, but to please everyone. Great job, you know, as far as Outlander is concerned. I loved episode 109. I could watch it like over and over again. Can't wait till episode 10. Really looking forward to Molly Brock. Thanks, you guys. Mary, hope you feel better. Hear from you soon. Thanks.
Now, normally we would get to all of your voicemails as soon as possible and actually address them one by one. But we've had so many because I actually called you guys out on our social media and it was awesome. You responded. So I apologize for the fact that we're just kind of bunching them all together. But I wanted to say you guys are all right and you're all so very nuanced about what the book says and what the show is saying. And it's great to recognize each as their own individual entities. It's fantastic. And I'm so happy that the book readers themselves are accepting the show as it is. In a lot of times you'll see people who read books are kind of like are elitist almost. And that is something that is really, really upsetting when that happens. But luckily, Outlander fans rule. And you guys are awesome, especially about the politics and accepting the fact that it has to be gone over in some form or fashion for guys like me or reviewers like me who have not read the books and are not getting those scenes. All right, well, let's get on the next batch of calls.
Hey, Mary. Hey, Blake. It's Stephanie in Pennsylvania. Just leaving you a voicemail about Saturday's show. Was awesome. My sister and I really had no words to say to each other after it was finished. It was just jam-packed, emotional. Acting was phenomenal. If they don't get any nods for this, there's something wrong with the system. But I'm looking forward to the rest of the episodes this season. So that's my feedback for you. I'm looking forward to see where they're going to take a lot of things, and I'll make sure to contact you again. Talk to you later. Bye.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Annette from Syracuse, New York. I've been listening to your podcast for quite a while now, and I found you guys by listening to your Living Reminders podcast, which I absolutely love. This is my first time calling in. I just want to let you know that I absolutely love this episode. I didn't think I was going to get to watch it because I don't have Stars, but I am staying at a place that has it, so I was lucky. Anyways, I wanted to let you know that one of my favorite parts was a scene where Jamie was going to give Claire, her spanking, that was hilarious. And I also felt like my heart was going to tear out when they had their first real argument and Claire was yelling at him and not acting thankful, and he was just brokenhearted and he just couldn't understand it. But anyways, I'm going to keep this short, so have a good day, and thank you for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Nobody I know watches the show, so this is the only way I can, you know, hear about it from other people. Thank you. Bye.
All right. I just had to jump in here real quick and say, Annette, my girl, thank you so much for calling in. I love the fact that you've called in now, finally, and you've partaken in this great voicemail system. I think it's fantastic, and you've been such a long-time listener. I know we've talked multiple times on social media, but I'm so happy that you've had a chance to finally contact us, and thank you so much. And Stephanie, yes, the episode was good, but I also felt like maybe they're just putting too much into these stories. Like they're trying to cover so much ground that they're almost inhibiting themselves from all of this. They're getting the politics and the arguments and everything. It's all just coming in at once. And maybe if they slowed down a little bit, they could really get involved in some of this material. But maybe that's just an affectation of the books because it is so dense and they need to fit the first book within the first season. It's a hard choice to make, and I think it's something that maybe they could do, but obviously they're making the choice to get it all in one episode, so we'll see what happens going forward.
Hi, Mary and Blake. This is Lori from Indianapolis, Indiana, calling with some thoughts about Outlander 109, The Reckoning. Overall, I want to say I really loved this episode. This is part of my favorite part of the book. And so seeing it come alive on the screen was really powerful for me, especially with a lot of the dialogue being taken completely from the book and hearing those words. And I thought the acting was incredible with Katrina and Sam. So really loving that. The strapping or the beating never really bothered me in the book. It was just something I kind of breezed past. And I still kind of feel the same way in the show. It's a little bit more disturbing seeing it, but I can breeze past it because I think the justification was given in the show, and that's a sign of the time. So it's something that I can kind of get over. And they show the consequences in the show a little bit more than they did in the book. So I appreciated that, but, you know, there was really some weight to the consequences of what happened there. The Leary, piece really kind of threw me for a loop because it's significantly different from the book. Which most of the time I'm really happy with the choices that they've made when they've changed from the book, but this is a little off for me. I'm wanting to see where it goes because a lot of things that happen coming up, not to spoil anything, her behavior now would impact some of those things. So I'm just interested to see how that's all going to go and how that's going to play out in the future. I loved also Tobias' blackjack at the beginning scene. I thought he was super scary, and I loved Jamie just shoving his head down on that desk and knocking him out. So it was a big Yahoo moment for me. So overall, great. Glad to have you guys back doing the podcast. I'm looking forward to listening. And Mary, I hope you're feeling better because I know there's nothing worse than being sick and being pregnant at the same time. So best wishes to you. Thanks.
Thank you so much for bringing this idea up of Leary and what she's doing and why she's doing it. And of course, I didn't read the book, so I don't know what is going on. But God, it just makes me feel like Leary is going to be a much bigger player in what is happening between Claire and Jamie. I wonder what she's going to do to drive a wedge between them. And I think I have an outlandish theory of the week that will get along with this, but I'm going to let this one simmer a little bit. I'm going to let it marinate. I'm going to see what happens with it. But yeah, I think this is going to be a much bigger deal than I think a lot of the show watchers are probably. It's not just like, oh, it's soap opera. Leary, she's here and she's just going to throw, you know, a wrench into the fire. No, I think it's something that is going to be a lot bigger than that. We'll see what happens.
Hi, this is Denise from Ohio, and I was just calling about episode 109, The Reckoning. First of all, I love, love, love listening to you guys, and I cannot wait to hear your next podcast. As far as Reckoning, I love that it's from Jamie's point of view. They had so much to cover, I wish they could have made it 2 hours. but it was a great show. Number one, Jack Randall. Oh, my gosh, just what a creep is he. I loved the fight by the stream when they were in each other's faces. That was just such a powerful scene. And then the spanking, it really didn't bother me in the book. I thought they made it kind of comical in the show, and it kind of got the point across without being too abrupt. When they got to the castle, I was surprised by Colin's reaction to Jamie marrying a Sasanuk and how he could now not succeed him. And Leary, ooh, what can we say about Leary? But she's just ooh. And my favorite part was when Jamie made his pledge to Claire, and then she puts a knife to his throat. And absolutely my least favorite part was the ending when he says, Leary. It was like a soap opera ending. But all in all, I love the show. I can't wait to see the next one. And love you guys. Keep up the great work. And Mary, hope you're feeling better. Bye.
Hey, guys. This is Kendra from Lincoln, Nebraska. And just calling in regards to most recent episode, first episode back. And I'm sure that everybody is kind of addressing this. But I just wanted to add my two cents in because I found both the scene itself and also the reaction to it that I've seen kind of across the board on social media to be a little bit disturbing. And, of course, this is the strapping scene. I read the books. I read the first one about 15 years ago, and I remember being slightly bothered by that scene to begin with, but I kind of pushed it aside. And, in fact, Diana herself kind of pushes it aside in the subsequent book. She kind of pretends it didn't happen. But I guess looking forward to it, I mean, this has been such a strong show overall. I kind of had high hopes that Ron Moore would take it and kind of turn around its head and take the violence out of it. Instead, he, you know, sets it to a lively tune and then cuts back and forth between the room upstairs and, you know, the guy is making jokes about it downstairs. And I found that really, really disturbing. I mean, because what is happening, not just in our modern society, but in the world of 1743, historically speaking, it still would have been frowned upon. It still would have been domestic violence. And so this is happening, and we're getting this jaunty tune, and, you know, we get this sly little smirk from Jamie right at the end. When he starts to whip her. And I found it really upsetting. And I'm actually still kind of riled about it. I'm up to the fourth book, and without giving any spoilers away, there is a heavy theme of violence against women, not just violence, but sexual violence against women that plays through all of the books. And it's disturbing. Because you choose your world when you're creating a story. You choose your world and you choose what happens in that world. And to choose a world where basically no one is safe and for the most part, the women that you have created, you know, none of them are safe from this kind of violence. It's disturbing. And, you know, honestly, I don't think I'm going to read past the fourth book, but what I wanted to say about the reaction on social media is that people seemed far more outraged, with Leary being depicted as, you know, coming on to Jamie and showing Jamie actually for a moment tempted. I mean, here he is, and he has just been, you know, kind of speaking about in voiceover about how he has this rift from Claire and he doesn't know if it can be fixed. Of course, in presented with that kind of temptation, any man is going to at least think about it. You know, but the one valiant thing he did in this episode was walking away from her. And the reaction on Twitter was that just him showing a slight, you know, modicum of temptation in that scene was far more villainous than him taking a belt to his wife. And, I don't know what that says about us as a society, that we're so willing to forgive that kind of behavior as long as the guy is dreamy. That's kind of my takeaway from it. Overall, I thought the episode was strong, but not as strong. And again, I was disappointed with the treatment of that scene. They had the opportunity to kind of really take the sting out of it, and they chose not to. And I am disappointed. I'll watch the rest of the show because I do know what's coming up, but. I am a little disappointed with this episode. Thanks. Bye.
I am amazed, really amazed, at the difference in interpretation of all of these scenes between listeners and readers and watchers. And everybody has a good and valid opinion of what is happening. Some people are very disappointed. Some people are disgusted. Some people laugh about it. Some people put it aside. It is so very, very different. And I love every bit of it. Thank you guys so much for coming in and really saying all the well wishes for Mary. She I know she really appreciates it. All right, everybody, thank you for calling in. Great feedback. Love it.
All right, let's get this week's Tweet of the Week. At Toka Marimba.
Ooh, nice name.
I know, I love marimbas. Said, just watched the season premiere of Outlander, and now I want to have sex with everything. Hashtag, damn y'all. Why did you make me read that?
Because I had to.
Congratulations, Toka Marimba. You are this week's Tweet of the Week.
Oh, man, that was good stuff.
That was. Now, Blake, you have outlandish theories of the week, and you said you actually have two.
I got two really good outlandish theories of the week. You want to hear it?
Go for it.
All right, let's do it. All right, the first one I got is this. After rewatching The Wedding and Both Sides Now from season 1A, I came away with two very specific things, both with huge foreshadowing. Okay, first, in The Wedding, Jamie says to, I think, Dougal, he says, I only plan on marrying once. And then the next thing that comes from Both Sides Now is Mrs. Graham says to Frank that travelers always come back. Okay? Right. Great. Awesome. Claire is going back to Frank in the 40s somehow, some way. I don't know how it's going to happen. Whether it's her choice or not, I have yet to decide. But she's going back to the 40s. She's going to come back. Of course, then she realizes when she does get back that probably, like, for a number of different reasons, the one main reason is she probably realizes that Frank isn't the one that's for her. She realizes that Jamie is the one that's for her. She needs to continue her life with him. She misses Jamie. Frank just doesn't have it. So she tries to get back to Scotland. And somehow, some way, maybe she gets back to Craignadoon and she gets back to Scotland. Problem is, she's going to come back and it's going to be like way in the future. For Jamie. And it's going to be like maybe 10, 15 years in the future, and he's going to be remarried.
Aww.
And her heart's going to be broken.
Aww.
And Jamie probably thinks that she's dead or she's gone. The same exact thing that happened to Frank. Oh, Claire ran off with another dude, or Claire got killed or whatever. Now the same exact thing is going to happen, and Claire is going to have to deal with this. And she is not going to know what happened. I think that's the first big outlandish theory of the week that I have for this season. Whether or not that happens this season, I don't know. But the big one I got is this. The big, big, big outlandish theory of the week. As a matter of fact, it's so big. It is so freaking big. I'm going to play the sound again. Here we go. Ready? The big one is that Column, later on this season, I guarantee this, at the end of this season, he is going to give Jamie up to Black Jack Randall because he has to answer for what happened at Fort William. And he has to make things right with BJR in the English. He doesn't want to have this Jacobite rebellion. He doesn't want to have to deal with BJR and all the things happen. He's responsible for the clan. He has to keep his clan safe. And if BJR comes up to him and says, listen, all debts are forgiven, all this crap, all the issues that go on, are forgiven as long as you give me Jamie. I need Jamie. And I guarantee you, I'm putting my freaking house on it, that Colm is the one that gives Jamie up at the end of the season. And Jamie is in BJR's hands.
You know what I'm going to say to that?
What?
Interesting.
Yeah. You know what that is?
Bam! Just like that. A winner!
Yeah, that's right. A winner. That's me.
You just put our house on the line.
Oh, God, that feels good, doesn't it?
Let's just close out the show. I'm sick of biting my tongue.
Oh, God, that feels good to get that out. Like, it was a big weight off. I was waiting all episode to say that.
Well, I'm proud of you.
All right. Whew. All right, let's close up.
I'm shaking my head.
My heart's pumping right now. That was so good. Like, I hit a swish. I'm just going to leave my hand up there, just like that. Oh, that felt good.
Oh, you non-book reader.
Oh, man, that was so good. All right, let's close out the show.
Okay. Thank you, everyone, so incredibly much for listening to our newest episode of Outlander Cast. We love to interact with you and chat with you. Once again, please remember that Blake is spoiler-free, if you didn't pick that up from what he just said. when you reach out to us on our social media outlets, they are all Outlander Cast. So that's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
You can reach us at outlandercast.com. And check out all of our cool stuff there, as well as all of our episodes and all of our sponsors. Please be kind to them, especially Dawn at Tag Your It.
And then while you're on the website, you can also check out the Mary and Blake store. There's the Sassenach Wasted shirt and more. And she was not Sassenach Wasted at all this episode.
No, she wasn't. Yeah. And you know, it's funny because we were rewatching the wedding episode and we noticed how much whiskey that girl actually consumed. Huge cupfuls, one after the other. If that were me, I wouldn't even be able to form words. I'd be dead.
You barely could at the end of our wedding. And you didn't even have nearly as much whiskey.
Oh my God, I love you so much, baby.
If you would like to send us an email, our email address...
This is what I say. I say this.
Too bad.
No, I'm going with it. You have to go to...
You don't even know.
I can't even say it now. I'm so flustered over my awesome outlandish theory of the week. Go to outlandercast@gmail.com.
You can also call the hotline. This is how we can hear your voice here on Outlander Cast. Our phone number is 503-454-6730, and you can also see that on outlandercast.com.
And we also want to remind you guys that this episode of Outlander Cast is brought to you by the Tag Your It Etsy shop. Whether it's an Outlander-inspired piece of jewelry for your favorite Sassenach, or just an original jewelry recreation designed by Dawn, the owner, you can find something there for anyone. So please, 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 for the love of God, please take the time to visit Dawn at www.tagyourit.biz, B-I-Z, biz. Tag your mama, tag your pet, tag your it, whatever it is.
Thank you so much, everyone. If you enjoyed this episode, find us on iTunes and feel free to give us a rating and a review. We really, really appreciate them. They make us so happy. And thank you for putting up with my sick voice. I won't be sick next time, I promise.
I hope not.
If I am, I mean, I might need Claire.
Sorry, guys.
Sorry. It's real life.
I know.
Real life.
All right, guys.
I'm Mary.
My name's Blake.
And you've been listening to Outlander Cast.